Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session. At that time, to ask a question, you may press star one on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. And I'd like to turn today's meeting over to Maureen O'Leary. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Candy, and good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us for the announcement of NOAA's Spring Outlook and Flood Risk for this year. My name is Maureen O'Leary, and I'm the media contact for the Spring Outlook. You can reach me by email at Maureen, M-A-U-R-E-E-N, dot O'Leary, O-L-E-A-R-Y, at NOAA.gov, and by phone at 202-578-5257. And also, the news release and maps related to this should be available at NOAA.gov, and you may have received an email with that embedded as well. So the Spring Outlook is part of a suite of weather and climate tools that NOAA provides emergency managers and water managers, state and local officials, and the public to help them prepare and make good decisions to protect life and property. Empowering the people with the information they need to take action to protect life and property is key to NOAA's effort to building a weather-ready nation. The U.S. Spring Outlook includes a flood risk, temperature and precipitation prediction, and an outlook for drought for the months from April through June. Today's media teleconference will begin with remarks from NOAA experts for about 15 to 20 minutes, and then we'll take questions from reporters. NOAA experts with me today to talk about the Spring Outlook are John Gottschalk. He's the chief of the Operational Predictions Branch at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, based in College Park, Maryland. John will discuss drought, temperature, and precipitation outlook. And we also have Dr. Tom Graziano, who is the director of the NOAA's Office of Water Prediction. Tom is joining us from the National Water Center, which is based in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Tom will deliver the flood risk this year. John?
Thank you, Maureen. Earlier this week, we received a reminder that winter is not quite over. A late season nor'easter brought heavy snow and damaging winds to much of the northeast U.S., followed by an intrusion of Arctic air across much of the eastern U.S. For instance, Binghamton, New York received 26.4 inches of snow in a 24-hour period, setting a new daily record for that location. And also, freeze warnings were issued for areas of the southeast in recent days. The recent weather was in stark contrast to the unusually mild winter in the northeast and in much of the country. Widespread warmth from east of the Rocky Mountains to the East Coast in January and February and below-average snowfall in much of this region contributed to the mild winter. In the U.S., it was the second warmest February on record and sixth warmest winter on record. Unseasonable warmer weather spanned 39 states. Two states, Texas and Louisiana, experienced their warmest winter on record. Although La Nina was weak and short-lived, as it was only present for 5 months, it did influence temperatures this winter in some areas. The Pacific Northwest, east to Montana, experienced colder than average temperatures this winter, consistent with La Nina conditions. However, much of the observed winter season precipitation was not typical of La Nina, especially across much of the West. One of the most important examples was California. Numerous storms between January and March brought record-breaking rain and snow to the entire state of California, making it the second wettest winter on record, behind the winter of 1969. Snowpack in the Sierra Mountains is at its greatest in more than 20 years. Too much rain too fast caused widespread flooding and mudslides in California, but it also resulted in remarkable drought improvement statewide. The Weekly Drought Monitor, released a few hours ago, reported 8% of California is currently in drought compared to 73% just 3 months ago. Not only has California's drought improved this winter, but drought areas were reduced on average across the contiguous U.S. In mid-February, severe to exceptional drought was at its smallest since 2011, only covering 3% of the contiguous United States. At this point, I will turn the call over to Tom Graziano, Director of NOAA's Office of Water Prediction, to talk about the spring flood risk.
Thank you, John. While most of the country experienced a mild winter with little snow accumulation and above that normal snowfall, over the northern plains and western United States has heightened the risk of flooding in these areas. In parts of north-central North Dakota and extreme northwestern Minnesota, snowpack and wet soils create a risk of moderate to major flooding in the Souris River Basin, the Devil's Lake Basin, and the northernmost tributaries of the Red River of the North Basin. The period from December 2016 to February 2017 brought significant rain and snow to sections of the western United States. This period was the wettest on record for Nevada and Wyoming, and the second wettest on record for California. In fact, from December through February, California saw 184% of average precipitation, with only the winter of 1969 being wetter for the state. In the western United States, it is still too early to determine the final spring flood potential, as additional mountain snowfall is possible over the coming months. Nevertheless, wet soil conditions above average reservoir storage levels and much above average snowpack combine to elevate the risk of spring flooding across parts of the West. Flooding is occurring in western Idaho this week as rain and snowmelt is leading to high water and flooding on rivers and streams. Shifting our focus to the northeast United States, in Maine and northern New Hampshire, there is a risk of minor flooding due to above normal snowpack in these areas, heightened by this week's snowstorm, which impacted the Middle Atlantic and New England states. South of this area, from the Middle Atlantic states to the Tennessee Valley and interior southeast, the risk of river flooding is lower due to a mild winter with below normal precipitation and relatively dry soil conditions. Over the central United States, high soil moisture and stream flows in parts of the upper Mississippi River Basin make this area vulnerable to flooding if heavy spring rains occur. These conditions bring a risk of minor flooding across southern Minnesota, northern Iowa, and Wisconsin. There's also a risk of minor flooding along parts of western Ohio, the western Ohio River Basin, in Indiana and Illinois, and the lower Mississippi and lower Missouri River Basins from Iowa to Louisiana, and in eastern Texas along the southeastern coastal plain. While these areas have experienced below average precipitation and dry soil moisture conditions over the last 6 months, flooding in these areas is driven predominantly by thunderstorm activity and associated rainfall, which is typical during the springtime. It is important to note that heavy rainfall at any time can cause local or regional flooding, even in places where the risk is currently considered low. NOAA hydrologists determine the spring flood risk based upon environmental intelligence collected across the country, which includes late summer, fall, and winter precipitation, frost depth, soil saturation levels, stream flows, snowpack, air and snowpack temperatures, and the rate of snowmelt. This national assessment is a compilation of local threats evaluated by our network of 122 weather forecast offices and 13 regional river forecast centers throughout the country. It floods somewhere in the United States nearly every day of the year. Flooding is the leading cause of severe weather-related deaths in the United States, claiming on average nearly 100 lives a year. More than half of these flood-related deaths occur in vehicles. Given these facts, take NOAA's advice. When approaching a water-covered roadway, turn around, don't drown. Roadway flooding can be deceptively deep and powerful, and in some cases, the road can be completely washed away. Know what to do before, during, and after a flood by visiting www.floodsafety.noaa.gov for helpful tips and resources. I'll give the floor back to John Gottschalk now from NOAA's Climate Prediction Center to deliver the outlook for April through June.
Thanks, Tom. For the next 3 months, on average, above-average temperatures are favored for a large area stretching from the southwest eastward to include the central and southern plains, Great Lakes, southeast, and northeast. Most of Alaska and Hawaii are also favored to see above-average temperatures. Areas of the south-central plains and eastern U.S. have the greatest odds for above-normal temperatures on average during this period. No areas in the U.S. are favored to see below-average temperatures this spring. For precipitation, odds favor wetter-than-average conditions for the northern Rockies, northern plains, and along the Gulf Coast from Texas to the western Florida panhandle. Below average precipitation is favored for the western half of Alaska and eastern Hawaii during April through June. Now turning to the latest on drought. Drought conditions have been slowly expanding over the month in parts of the southern plains and southeast due to continued dry conditions, warm temperatures, and seasonal increased water demand from early springtime vegetation. This trend is favored to continue in parts of the southern plains as drought development is forecast for northwest Texas and far eastern New Mexico this spring. It's a different story in some areas of the northern plains, south central plains, Tennessee Valley, Mid-Atlantic, and Northeast, where these areas are favored to see some improvement. The beginning of the rainy season in Florida favors drought improvement there during April through June, and the few remaining drought areas in California and Arizona are expected to persist with the onset of the dry season in April. An update on ENSO, one of the most important climate factors used to develop the seasonal outlook is the El Nino Southern Oscillation, or ENSO. We are currently in ENSO neutral conditions and favored to remain so into summer. During ENSO neutral periods, the ocean temperatures, tropical rainfall patterns, and atmospheric winds over the tropical Pacific Ocean are near average and less likely to significantly impact global weather patterns. Last week, NOAA forecasters said there is a 50% probability that El Nino conditions may emerge during the July through September three-month period. The ENSO forecast is updated each month. That concludes my remarks.
All right, thank you, John. So before we move to the Q&A portion of this media teleconference, I'd like to introduce a few of our other experts who are on the line to help with specific questions. Dr. Deke Arndt is the chief of the Climate Monitoring Branch at NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information. He will assist with questions and answers about climate and climate statistics. Brad Rippey, a meteorologist from USDA, will assist with agriculture-related questions and drought questions. And also on the line is a hydrologist from each of our 13 river forecast centers. And these are the folks that are going to provide that local view of any flood risks if you would have additional information you need. Let's see. Also, I just wanted to note, too, we're aware that the president has released his blueprint budget for 2018 today. And we're not taking questions on that on this call because we're focused on the spring outlook. All questions related to the budget need to be directed to the Department of Commerce, Public Affairs Office, because they'll be handling that. Their phone number is 202-482-4883. And operator, if you can let us know how to get in the queue to let the reporters know how to get in the queue for questions.
Thank you. At this time, to ask a question, press star one, please. Please unmute your line and record your name to be introduced. Again, for questions or comments, press star 1. If you'd like to withdraw the request at any time, you may press star 2. Thank you. One moment, please, for your first question. Thank you. As a reminder, for questions or comments, press star 1, please. Thank you. We have our first question from Seth Borenstein with Associated Press. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. I guess this is for Tom. Can you put the whole 2017 spring flood risk map in sort of historical context? It looks like it's sort of small compared to previous years. Is that right? Is this small nationwide, you know, compared to previous years? Is it large compared to previous years? Is there a good analog year? And then, especially for the, you know, that little purple area near in just at the northern area, North Dakota, Minnesota, is there a good analog year? Are we talking 2011 flooding? You know, how bad will this be compared to their usual nasty flooding they get every few years?
Thanks for that question. In terms of what we have on the map, it's quite frankly similar to what we've seen the past few years. The last time we really had a significant risk over the continental United States was in 2011. With regard to the upper Midwest, particularly North Dakota, and risk in the Souris Basin, I would say this is probably on par or somewhat similar to what we saw in 2013. But at this point, I'm gonna redirect you here to our local expert at the North Central RSC, and that is Brian Connolly. He is our acting service coordination hydrologist up there. Brian?
Thank you, Tom. That's a very good question. And up in the North Dakota area here, it's hard to pinpoint a single analog year for these events because it depends on the location that we're talking about. However, I would agree with what Tom said about the Souris. We are looking at something in the ballpark of the 2013. You could also look at 1976 as something close to what we're looking at in the Souris Basin. Over in the Red River Basin, we're looking at events like 1979 and 2006. For some of the tributaries, 2013 is also a corollary that we're looking at. Okay. I do want to emphasize, however, that we are really focused on the northernmost basins in the Red River Basin of the North. Much of the snow in the southern basins in the Red River of the North has already melted and run off. The other basin I'd like to mention is Devil's Lake. Mm-hmm. Devil's Lake today is about 27 feet higher than it was. I'm sorry, 23 feet higher than it was in 1997, and we're looking at a 3 to 4 foot rise in the elevation of that lake this coming spring.
So, would you say that this is Brian? That this is among the worst. Riskiest we're seeing. I mean, those are good analog years. But so is that some of the big highest risk those areas have ever seen, or is this sort of something they see every few years? Because you did mention a lot of years.
I did mention a lot of years. Correct. It's not among the worst. We've had worse floods up there than what we're expecting. So I'd say we're looking at something more like. I hate to even speculate as to the recurrence interval for what we're looking at here, but it's not among the worst.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And, John, if I can have one question for you. Without an ENSO, well, what's the main factor in the three-month forecast for both temp and precip? Is it just persistence, or what's pushing you there?
Yeah, thanks, Seth. You're right. With ENSO neutral conditions, we are considerably more limited from a seasonal outlook perspective. But we do have other information that we can use. We have some information with regard to the surface antecedent conditions that have some memory in the climate system, such as soil moisture, snowpack, things like that. But also one of the things we rely on pretty heavily in these cases is also that we have short-term climate prediction models, similar to weather models, but they're basically provide an assessment of temperatures and precipitation further out in time. And one of the things this year with the outlook that we saw was the majority of the forecast guidance or from these models that we were looking at were pretty consistently favoring a strong signal for above-average temperatures across much of the country. And when we typically see general consensus with a number of the forecast models in this regard, that tends to increase our confidence, and we'll go ahead and put that forecast on the outlook map. For parts of the southern, south-central plains and parts of the southeast and in the mid-Atlantic, generally drier than normal soil moisture conditions also played a role with tilting odds towards above-average temperatures as well. So there's a few factors.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. As a reminder for additional questions, press star 1, please. Our next question comes from Patricia Kitchen with Newsday New York. Your line is open.
Oh, hi. Thank you. Thanks so much. Seth just asked my question about, I was going to ask about what was, you know, what were the factors you used for the above normal leanings for those months. Is there anything specific like about New York, the Long Island area that would have come into play, or would it be just what you had just told him? Anything?
Yeah, this is John at CBC. Thanks for the follow-up. Mm-hmm. It was primarily what I just described, but also we have had, to a lesser extent, and there's some considerations for some of the warmer ocean temperatures right off the coast. We've had a persistent signature from the Gulf of Mexico up along, for the majority of the winter, along the eastern seaboard. Mm-hmm. So that maybe is an additional factor, but it's probably more minor than the other.
Sure. Okay, great. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Currently, we're showing no questions. As a reminder, for questions or comments, press star 1, please. Thank you. And at this time, we're showing no questions.
All right. Thank you, Candy. I think that's going to conclude our media teleconference. If anybody has questions later today, feel free to give me a call. My name's Maureen O'Leary. You can reach me by email at maureen.o'leary@noaa.gov or by phone at 202-578-5257. And you can get the news release, if you don't have it already, with maps, the Outlook maps and the flood risk maps at noaa.gov. Thank you.
Thank you for your participation. That does conclude today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.